Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and top leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to another episode of Synapse Think Tank of the Air. And we have quite a crew of thinkers here today. We have a variety of people. We have Gary Cunningham.
Woo!
From Meta.
All right.
And
here.
Grant, what's your title now?
I am president and CEO of Meta.
Okay, kind of reigning monarch.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you have a good job as a funneling millions of dollars into upcoming entrepreneurs.
That's what we do. We work with entrepreneurs of color, and we work with those that have growth potential,
okay.
And we get them to the next level.
Okay, I see everybody's raising their hands here. They want part of that, handing out their cup to catch some of those millions. We also have an entrepreneur that's caught millions, maybe more. Is it? I'm not sure. Scott Burns is a serial entrepreneur with Structural right now.
Yep, that's right.
But you made much fame with Gov Delivery.
That was a 16-year run.
16-year run. And I'm one of your clients, so to speak, in that I received many of text messages that said, there's a snow emergency in St. Paul. Move your car before 8 o'clock. So.
That's right. That's how we started out. Snow emergencies are like the Harry Potter release of government. It's the day everybody pays attention to what's going on. And it's we did a lot of that, and we expanded that work from snow emergencies to alerts for the IRS and Medicare and others all around the country and in Europe.
Wow. You delivered. And then speaking of snow, go to ice and just cold weather in general. We have with us Kat Beltman, who's the brand new executive director of Great Northern.
Yes. Hello.
Hi. How are you doing, Kat?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
So I'm wondering, I mean, does Eric Dayton, does he leave the windows open all winter in your office? Does this get you acclimated?
I don't know about that, but definitely lots of outdoor excitement about the impending cold and snow.
Hmm. And then I think you got acclimated, Scott, as a skier.
Yeah, that's my background. I grew up in Duluth, and I was an alpine skier, which is a little more common in Minnesota than people think with our small hills.
Sure, the Minnesota Alps.
Yeah, exactly. and I was up in Duluth doing it, and then I moved to Vermont when I was 16 to do it full-time for a couple years, almost full-time. I also had to graduate from high school, and then I went to Dartmouth and then circled back to Minnesota.
What kind of hills do they have around Dartmouth?
Great hills. It's icy out east. It's not like Colorado, but, you know, the hills are real mountains, so it's a nice place to train. And if you're trying to ski tough conditions, the east is a great place to go because it can rain and freeze in the same 6 hours.
Hmm. Sounds like fun, huh, Kat?
It's brilliant. It's not Vail.
Yep.
Gee. Well, we were looking for, I was thinking of ways that we can tie you all together, what you might have in common. And the first thing that popped into mind, you're all working to make this a stronger economy in our region in one way or another. I think doing it most well, maybe Scott, you're doing it the most directly, but you're doing a strong secondary way of doing it, Gary, by helping young entrepreneurs of color.
Well, not all of them are young.
Okay.
But we are. I mean, the reason I do what I do, and I think most of our staff, is because what we really want is to create a thriving community that works well for everyone. And in order to do that, we need strong entrepreneurs of color. We need strong businesses throughout every segment of our community. And one of the things we know is that entrepreneurs of color actually need additional supports in order to get access to capital, in order to get access to jobs and RFPs and contracts, et cetera. And so that's what we do. And we represent about last year, companies that had $1 billion in revenue. They employed 6,000 people.
Cumulatively.
Yeah, right? Cumulatively. They employed 6,000 people. Their average salary was about $23 an hour. And half of those people were people of color. So, you know, if we look at trying to change the trajectory of our community, which is going to be 40% here in the Twin Cities in the next number of years, people of color, we've got to make sure that everybody is participating in our economy. Everybody is participating in making this region competitive. And that's what we do.
And I like the regional approach because it's holistic. If someone's doing great, it helps everybody. But if someone's doing poorly, it brings everyone down. So we need to bring everyone up.
Yeah, we actually work throughout the state of Minnesota. So we have clients in Bemidji and up in Duluth and Grand Forks and Rochester. So we have clients all over the state of Minnesota. But we have a lot here in the Twin Cities as well. Hmm.
And one thing you told me once is that businesses of color tend to hire more people of color.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's not only just my opinion, it's a fact.
Well, Gary said.
Yeah. It's not Gary said. This is really a fact that we know that people of color hire more people of color. And so we work with businesses that have $1 million or more in revenue or have the potential to get to $1 million or more, because they create jobs and economic opportunity within communities. But they also add to the economy. I mean, we're into zero barriers for entrepreneurs in general, but zero barriers for our entrepreneurs in particular.
Hmm. And you don't deal with the people that just are starting today. Hey, I'm going to start a business tomorrow. Do you have $1 million for me? You don't deal with those people.
You can compete. So what we teach people is how to compete, right? So we have our $1 million prize for entrepreneurs of color, where it's a pitch competition for them. So you could come and bring your idea.
Oh, so you can start from scratch.
And you can start from scratch. And we look at all kinds of ideas. And then we actually whittle you down to those people that actually do the pitches in front of investors to make their ideas work. So we do that as well as work with established businesses.
Hmm. And Kat, you there's a sense, I talked to your boss, I think, or one of your bosses, Eric Dayton, and his interest was basically national. Mm-hmm. He wants to help make the Twin Cities region and Minnesota in general a place where people want to come to and then maybe invest or live or do something else, but at least become acquainted with it. Mm-hmm. And not horrified by our feature of being a cold place.
Right. And I think, you know, most people wouldn't think of a 10-day festival in January as an economic development tool. But I think from our perspective, you know, Minnesota nationally has a perception. If you go, you know, I go sit on an airplane and somebody says, oh, where are you from? I'm from Minnesota. Oh, I'm so sorry. How do you survive?
My condolences.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm tired of that narrative. And I think nationally, if we can, both locally and nationally, if we can start flipping the narrative of winter from a deficit to this is something that we can embrace, it's a part of our culture, and you can get out and do really fun and unique things, not only does it help to acquaint people with more of what Minnesota is actually about, beyond just the snow and cold. But we also know that our employers here have an issue attracting and retaining talent because winter, we don't have a good narrative around winter and why somebody should from out west or down south should want to move and relocate to the Twin Cities. But if we're able to put together some really great programming and really highlight what our strengths are, that's going to help give employers that additional narrative that they need to convince people to move here.
They probably won't like my narrative. I mean, I've been in Minnesota for most of my life, and it's like, boy, this ain't as cold as it used to be. This is relatively warm, you know, the global warming and everything. It's kind of nice to see sub-zero sometimes. Last year, we had a good hit of it during the Super Bowl. I bet that answered some prayers.
And climate is definitely something that when we think about our economy, there are a number of organizations and companies that rely on cold weather. And so, you know, a lot of people would love to see the Minnesota warm up in the winter, but I think if we saw that, we'd also see a lot of A lot of our strong traditions go away because
Melted ice castles.
Melted ice castles. We would have pond hockey, which is a huge tradition in Minnesota.
Swamp hockey, I guess.
Skiing, we don't have, you know, we've got some hills compared to other places, but skiing would go away. So I think there's definitely, we want people to start being excited when they hear that it's going to be 18 degrees or when they hear that we're going to get 2 to 3 inches of snow.
Now, Great Northern is relatively new, but it's actually kind of a consolidation of a few ongoing events, plus you're trying to add some new ones. But what are the goers so far?
Yeah, so we started our first event was in 2017, so we're entering 2019 will be our third year. We are, in 2019, the event will be January 24th to February 3rd. And started as seeing an opportunity to bring together some of our iconic winter festivals, so the St. Paul Winter Carnival, the City of Lake Lopet, and U.S. Pond Hockey Championship. Bring those together to package under one, you know, if you come to Minnesota during this time frame, not only can you come for pond hockey, but stay for a little while and then go visit the Winter Carnival in St. Paul, go skiing with the Lopet. And then in addition to that, we're working on, we do our own original programming. And this year we'll be partnering once again with Surly. They've been a great partner of ours for the last 2 years. And looking at adding some new exciting programming that we're not quite ready to announce, but will likely involve some outdoor music in an outdoor setting in a really exciting way.
I was going to say you had items on the back burner, but that's not the right metaphor for such a cold
festival. Items in the icebox?
Yes. We have
ice
some,
chest?
We have some ideas in the fridge.
In the fridge, exactly.
So Scott, you have a bit of a reputation as a St. Paul booster. Is that correct, or am I?
I'm doing what I can. The city's been good to me, so I'm not from there. But I think a lot of my partners in boosting St. Paul and making sure that we continue to be a great part of the Twin Cities economy and the innovation economy is a lot of those partners are not from town either. I would say that many of us have chosen to live there with a lot of choices. And just, I love the city. I love the neighborhoods. I love the economy. And the community has been great to me. And I think it's a great place for others. So I'd like to promote that.
Well, I'm glad you sold your business and you didn't go anywhere. You stayed in St. Paul.
Yeah, I could have moved to California or Florida or something like that. But we intend to keep paying taxes in Minnesota forever. We're not gonna escape. We like contributing back to the economy. And our family just loves it here. And I will also say it's such a better environment for entrepreneurship now than when I first started GovDelivery. I've joked about this is maybe a tough joke to make, but being an entrepreneur in 2000 felt like especially after the dot-com bust, felt like a drug habit. You know, you're explaining, you're trying to hide it from people and telling them how you don't have a normal job. And it was nothing to be proud of.
What
really.
Is it? Oh, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and now there's a lot of us, and it's awesome.
Cool now.
That's right.
Getting back to the winter, it's the thing to do is to be what Silicon Prairie.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's also very true that it was especially in Minnesota the tech entrepreneurs were kind of all white dudes when I started, and now we just have like this incredible. Diversity of entrepreneurship. The work Gary's doing is amazing. The work that Lunar Startups is doing in the same building I'm in at Osborne 370 in St. Paul, where they're cultivating entrepreneurs who are disadvantaged of different types, who need that kind of extra boost to be successful and maybe have a little extra resilience to bring to the table too, which is great. You're seeing efforts like that all over the city. And I will say that it's pretty nice to be an entrepreneur and look around and see people who represent the community you live in, not just a sort of set group of folks. So that's one of the reasons why, after selling GovDelivery, I worked on Osborne a little bit and then wanted to start again with a new company. It's a much better time to do it, and it's a much more fun time to be an entrepreneur now. It's less lonely, and it is seen as being a cooler thing as opposed to being something you have to kind of explain to your family in Minnesota, which is how it felt in 2000. I'd explain why I didn't keep my job at McKinsey. You know, they thought I got fired, and that's why I was starting something new.
So there you go. And now it's, I think one result, it's harder to park in downtown St. Paul. I mean, it used to be the meters would be available and then like a nickel an hour, and now they ramp that up and if you can find one.
You know, culturally, it's kind of like saying, I love the cold, obviously. I mean, I... I absolutely adore the cold. I'm outside every single day. I run outside. I ski outside. I like the warm weather too, so I don't want to promote just cold, but we have great warm weather here. I think when you think of crowds and parking and density, I travel around the country a great deal, and I love a busy street. I love a restaurant that I have to park three blocks from to get to. And I think in St. Paul, we've confused convenience and economic development in a way where you say it's a little harder to park. You know, when it's $20 to park downtown and it causes you to take the light rail, I'd say we've won the battle.
Well, I have taken the light rail. So yeah. Now, what's your new business? Structural? Is that correct?
Yeah. Structural really builds on a passion that I have. You know, GovDelivery's business was essentially about being as good at marketing flu shots and snow emergencies as we are in this country at marketing shoes and consumer products. So kind of adapting a marketing model to government, which has historically struggled to market itself. And we did that. We built up with 1,000 governments communicating with 160 million people. So I feel like that mission was well achieved. And structural is very much kind of applies sort of a similar disruptive concept to the workforce. So it's an internal people network powered by data. And the best way to think about it is that everyone who's working 40 hours a week ought to have as much information when they're making a decision about who to partner with on their team as they have when they're choosing their next show on next Netflix. And right now, you have more data telling you what to buy and what to watch on TV than you have in a typical company about who to work with, what their strengths are, what they're interested in. And structural is changing that for a number of Fortune 500 companies and mid-sized companies already. So it's been a work of passion and also one that I'm just excited about because of the momentum and I think the applicability to making the 40-hour work week better.
Well, I mean, that's part of retaining employees if they're happy where they work. And back when I was at Minnesota Business, we did a story on destination workplace, that your workplace should be like a fun place to go and all your coworkers should be your friends and then you hang out afterwards. And you know, many places are not like that.
You know, there's different people want different things from work. I think what you just described, there's certainly a portion of workers, especially in tech, that want to play ping pong and have the happy hour and other things. And what you said about, you know, destination workplace, that's important to a lot of people. But the other thing is that there's no substitute for feeling like your work is meaningful, like you're doing things that you're good at, like you're learning, valuable, like you're part of a great team and winning and being successful in the market. And so we like to sort of bring together, get to know your colleagues better and hopefully have that happy hour destination, ping pong tournament, whatever floats your boat. At the same time, just kick butt together at the work you're trying to accomplish, which is a great joy, honestly, whether you're serving food in a restaurant, sweeping a floor, working in manufacturing, or delivering a software product. Nothing feels better at the end of the day than knowing you did a good job with your colleagues.
Hmm. And then, Gary, your workplace just moved.
Yes.
You opened up. Where did you open up?
Well, we're at 1256 Penn Avenue North in a brand new building. We're partnered with Thor and Target to create a new experience in North Minneapolis.
Those are not bad neighbors.
Yeah, and we've created the Regional Accelerator Center, and it really is about how do we lift up entrepreneurs throughout the region and throughout the state, but also in North Minneapolis.
So you have like a stronger identity with a lot of your constituents.
We actually serve people outside of North
Minnesota,
but we so
right.
So
but,
you know, we have some folks that are in North Minneapolis, but a majority of who we serve is actually outside of.
Oh, okay.
Outside of that geographic area.
Okay, but you're more identifiable there than you were downtown and
well,
stuck.
Well, parking's a lot better.
Stuck.
So downtown, our clients would, you know, they'd have to walk that three blocks to come see us. Maybe it's great to go to a restaurant and walk three blocks.
So it's all about parking. We're here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air with Gary Cunningham from Meta. We have Kat Beltman from Great Northern and Scott Burns from Structural. And we'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air, talking about the connections that our guests have today, Gary Cunningham, Kat Beltman, and Scott Burns. In the lobby, it turns out that the Citizens League is a big link between all of you, and I'm just vaguely aware. I am a citizen, and that's about as close as I know about it. I saw an event where the current director talked about a magazine that she unfolded. So that's all I know. You have a magazine. What's the Citizens League connection here?
Well, so the Citizens League is an organization that actually started in the 50s. And so some of the great things that have happened in Twin Cities, like Hennepin County Medical Center, or how we look at traffic patterns and how investment in transit, investments in education, many of those things started out of Citizens League committees that actually a group of citizens getting together and actually talking about what the improvement could be.
So kind of a grassroots approach.
Absolutely. And it's still doing that same work in different ways now today than it did in the 1950s. And I was the president of the league in the early 2000s. And we all have in common Sean Kershaw. I was the chair of the board, I should say. They called it the president of the league. And Sean actually ran the league and was the executive director of the league for a number of years and just till recently. He's now at the Wilder Foundation. I was a person on board that hired Sean. And then Scott?
Yeah, I was part of I think, as you know, Gary convened a Blue Ribbon Commission. The board convened a sort of Blue Ribbon Commission to look at whether the Citizens League had relevance going forward, how it could reinforce that relevance. Sean was the chair of that committee with Gene Levander King, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My son skis with her nephews, grandnephews maybe. That was just a fantastic commission. Dave Durenberger was on it, Pam Wheelock, just some of the real thought leaders in town. And I was lucky to be, I think they wanted to bring the age average down a little bit. And I was one of the two people. Yeah. Gary was bringing the age average down at the time himself.
And I was too. That was
yeah.
Really up there.
it was a while ago. We were all younger. We had this great commission and discussion, and I think it reinvigorated people's spirit to connect the mission of the league to the next generation. And
wow.
What is important about the Citizens League is its nonpartisan nature, the fact that it builds on Minnesota's tradition of trying to innovate and just make good public policy, which
yes.
It, why on earth that's a partisan issue, you know, I don't know. I'll never understand why we can't just look at facts at least sometimes together and make good policy. And in fact, I'm so proud to live in a state that often does do that. We make great policy. St. Paul City government has been making terrific public policy lately, like getting rid of library fines.
But
you know? I love it. And that's what the league does. It made that space possible, and we reinvigorated the mission, and then Sean was hired to run it, which was great.
Well, I don't understand politics totally or at all. But I remember hearing once that in the Minnesota, the light rail was seen as a liberal thing. And then they pointed out, I don't know if it was San Francisco or someone, they said, well, there it was a Republican thing. It's like, well, you know, it's the same thing, isn't it? But it's so you just get the label and then it sticks and then you don't like it because it's the other team.
Yeah, I appreciate the work you're doing. I mean, there's a lot of people in this town just doing a lot of hard work trying to make sure they're convening people and connecting them in interesting ways. And I'll tell you, my kids go to a public school where when they took a vote the last election, 100% of the children in all three of my kids' classes voted for Hillary Clinton. 100%.
Really?
So that's not diversity, is it?
No.
Right? Meanwhile, we drive out to Afton Alps to go skiing and— You know, my kids have to whisper to me in the corner that they think there might be a guy who voted for Trump on the chairlift. But it speaks to the division and how we've self-segregated ourselves by how we think. And I think these convenings are really important. And the league was way ahead of the curve on that need and is probably more important now than ever, even as maybe it's harder to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I just finished a book by Robert Rice called Common Ground. Mm-hmm. where he talks about these divisions and the fact that, and he talks about it from a Democratic and Republican perspective, a liberal conservative perspective, and talks about the values that we've lost and what we're losing as a nation because we can't come to some common ground about those fundamental principles that we agree upon, and that it's really stopping our progress as a community. It's really powerful to think about focusing on the issues that we face together and how we can solve them together. And then he talks about how that transformed from the 80s till now, meaning that in the 70s and 80s, there was some kind of agreement, some fundamental appreciation that we had to work together as a society to get somewhere. And then it became personalized over time, meaning, you know, you're a bad person. It's not that your ideas are bad, but somehow you're a bad person.
And you're anti-American and you're evil.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I was able to work with, on the same executive committee, Dave Durenberger and George Latimer together. And we actually did a lot of great work together because we weren't going there as I'm the Republican or you're the Democrat or whatever. We were going there because we were trying to solve Minnesota problems, not because we were trying to solve and beat one, you know, gamesmanship and beat each other. And so I learned a lot from that experience. And I work in my work today in the entrepreneurship space. We clearly have our entrepreneurs represent a whole wide variety of political and positions, but we're all trying to do one thing, make money.
Scott,
right, I don't mean to be crass.
But see, that's an honest objective that a lot of people can agree with, and it's out in the open. And Scott, thank you for mentioning our convenings. I think you're referring to the Synapse events that we have, and what we've developed is what we call the Jazz Think Tank, where we get four people with diverse ideas at a table and have kind of a structured conversation where it's not non-judgmental questions. People are sharing their perspectives. And my viewpoint is that the more perspectives, the better. Each one has a bit of the truth. So the more you have, the more diverse they are, the bigger picture of reality you get. Mm. We were recently hired by the University of St. Thomas. They had a racial incident, and so they called out their big action plan. So we were called out to kind of supplement that kind of at the grassroots level by getting staff and students together to talk across different silos, I guess is what we're doing. But we didn't want to leave out that Kat Beltman also has a Citizens League connection.
I do. Yeah, I was worked at the League for 6 years. And
6 years?
6 years. 7 years.
That's a good long time.
Yeah, and you know what? It is a fantastic organization, and I think coming into the organization, I was starting out my career. I thought that I wanted to work on campaigns and do political work, and I quickly realized that wasn't the type of the way that I wanted to be involved in policy and politics. And you know, the great thing about the League is that you know their tagline is "Common Ground for the Common Good." And I think having the opportunity to work with an organization that wasn't focused on politics, I think that's an important distinction. The League isn't focused on politics. They're focused on policy. And so how are we developing sound policy, bringing a diversity of perspectives together to help us really inform a decision? And it's not about one person getting 100% of their way. It's about let's talk about what we need and how we can compromise to get to a place where we can all agree that this is the right move for Minnesota. So I think working with the League really helped to inspire not only my interest in that, or I should say helped to reinforce the importance of having that diversity of perspective when you're thinking about issues, but also I think really helped to make me even more passionate about Minnesota as a state and how we're really unique. And that being involved civically is something that can be fun. Something that we have a responsibility to do as community members. And there's ways that you can get involved in policy that's not writing a report, or you can have fun conversations and you can do policy in a way that lowers the barrier to entry and is fun. But I'm also kind of a nerd, so that might be why I think it's
well,
fun.
Being a nerd is okay, but the thing is, people are so cynical about government these days. They're cynical about politics, government. I mean, it's almost as low as their appreciation of journalism and lawyers.
I think, though, that's where I would push that we don't need government to do everything for us. I make policy decisions every day by where I choose to live, what car I choose to drive, where I send my kids to school, where I shop. And that's me making an impact. And my choices ultimately will roll up at some point. There is going to be a time where I don't have people in office who represent me that I'm happy about, but they're going to move on. And the greatest impact that I can have is how I choose to live my life here as a community member. And frankly, I don't want to live in a community where I have a bunch of me running around. I want to have that diversity. I want to have somebody who I don't agree with on every topic, because that's going to make me better informed and a more well-rounded individual.
It reminds me of an Oscar Wilde quote I just read, be yourself. Everyone else is taken.
Exactly.
Well, so, on this topic, Steve, what is government? It is the place where we come together to make decisions about how we're going to allocate the resources we all put in together. So the government is our parks. The government is the buses outside that are running here. The government are the roads that we build. The government is the schools that educate our kids. The government is really us. So when we separate it out and say the government is bad, and that's been a mantra for a number of years, and so we've had a successful campaign that's kind of been an anti-government, anti-public service campaign. But I go back to the words of John F. Kennedy. You know, it's not what, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's not what I can do for myself. It really is what we can do for each other. And, you know, I think we've made some determinations as a community that we want a safety net for people. We want people to do for themselves. But if they can't, we need to create a structure around them so that they can be elevated. We've also made some decisions about how we're going to allocate our resources. In recent days, those decisions get tougher and tougher to make because of the partisanship, because of the, I get people all the time at the legislature saying, I love entrepreneurship. I love what you're doing, Gary, but I can't sign on to the bill because that other person over there signed on. Not because of the idea, but because of their party and how their party is structured around, I've got to be in this gang or in this tribe. And so we're really balkanized into tribalism in our community. And we need to start breaking that down because it's not helping build a better community.
Boy, just that anti-ism. I was with the staff of Governor Ventura when he was in. And one of the things I heard that increased my cynicism was a legislator saying, well, I agree with that, but I'm not going to vote for it because he's going to get the credit.
Exactly.
So there you have the ego, whether it's tribal or not.
Yeah.
So now, Gary, I have to ask you, now you were had a unique view of politics in Minneapolis. You were the first man of Minneapolis for a while.
Did you
learn anything from any special insight you can share?
What I learned is that from sitting on watching it, it can be a very competitive sport.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. No, I learned a lot of things. I mean, one, I love this community, and I love the people in it. And I also enjoy the time that I had doing that. I still am on the Metropolitan Council, so I still serve in some way, and we certainly have had our ups and downs with regards to public opinion and that type of thing. But I think the real thing is what kind of community we want to create for our kids, our grand, not just about right now, but also for the future generations. And the reason we're investing in parks and the reason we're investing in open space, all of these things matter to the future generation. My great-grandkids will benefit from the services that I've had or that Betsy had as mayor. So we're giving back, and now we're giving back to our own kids and our own grandkids. So it just transforms, and nobody's permanent in these roles. All of them are caretakers of an institution for a short period of time. And everybody needs to transition out. I'm transitioning out of my role at Metropolitan Council. Probably could stay, but somebody else needs to take on that duty and that mantle and et cetera.
Now, after seeing your wife's experience, does it make you want to run yourself or run away from it?
I've never had any ambition to be, you know, it takes a special type of person to be an elected official. And so that's never been my ambition. So it didn't deter me, nor did it encourage me. It basically said, oh, she wants to do that. Let me help her meet her dreams. You know, as my partner, I want her to have experience her dream, but that's not my dream.
So you want
I'm doing what my dream is right now, running Meta.
You were able to, to go along for the ride. Another thing I heard, if you remember Pat Paulson 50 years ago, he ran kind of a fake presidential run, and he said, if nominated, I will not seek election. If elected, I will not serve.
So. You have some... some strange.
Sticking out, it's, those are the things that stick in my memory.
Yeah, and,
well, I always thought that was Lyndon Johnson. Well, the you know, the one thing we have going for us, I love. There's like one of the great joys in life is having a good amount of the time you spent with people who are much younger because they bring a fresher perspective than people who've been around for longer. They often bring a fresher perspective. And I would say I'm working with some very young people, even sort of tapping into Gen Z now. My last company was majority millennial by 08. And my kids are in that embedded in that sort of Gen Z, that newer generational mindset. And there's a couple things about them that we have reason to be optimistic about. One is a complete rejection of hierarchy. And
now this is Gen Z,
both millennials and Gen Z.
Okay.
Just no time for hierarchy at all. I would say that the difference, the millennials are a very collaborative group. And I think that that's going to really play a great role. You look at our mayor right now in St. Paul, open, collaborative, transparent. People talk about him being the first, you know, person of color elected mayor in St. Paul, but I'll tell you, it feels sometimes like more of a change to have an open, transparent millennial running the city. Mm. We've had some great mayors since I've been there, but having that mindset is just extraordinary in the city. It's so collaborative and open, and that's the generation that he represents, just barely, by the way. He's not much younger than me. and then you look at the Gen Z is just coming of age in a time when information and facts are so available and native to them that they expect to understand everything at a detailed level before they make decisions or evaluate things. And that's something that they will bring to the table in, I think, a very, very positive way. They're asking the right questions on global warming already at age 12. And they're not a patient group. Like, I live with these people. They're like, Dad, how long have you known about global warming?
And what have you done?
And now what has happened? Like, explain yourself, buddy. And I think that that's good, a combination of this collaborative generation, transparent generation, and this sort of this fact-based generation coming after them. That's where the hope is, really, for me. And I think you can already see that transition starting to happen in politics, and it's going to be an amazing thing. I'm really convinced.
I did learn one new word from the young entrepreneurs that I worked with is co-opetition.
Yeah. So
get along together, but you're still kind of fighting, but you'll do it together. We're talking with Gary Cunningham, Kat Beltman, and Scott Burns here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau. We'll be right back.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, talking with people with a lot in common, except maybe generational status. I don't know. I'm a boomer. Gary, I bet you're a boomer.
I'm at the tail end.
Tail end of the boomer. Really?
Well, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I did hear that. That's a little harsh.
Really?
He's because
like, you're
so mature,
aren't you?
You're so mature. Okay, well, we'll move on now.
I don't know.
Scott?
It's a good idea to move on.
Yeah.
Scott?
Okay. I thought Gary was Gen X. I was going to go for that, for sure.
Okay, sure. Be on his good side.
I'm Gen X. I'm Gen X, 1975. Born, so
kind
of puts me not right in the middle, but a little on the a little on the back end of Gen X.
Boy, actually, I just read the Pew organization just put on their website how they categorize the different groups. So what year were you born?
Oh, this is a great topic. I like where you're going with this.
1957.
57?
Yes.
You're a boomer.
I didn't say I wasn't a boomer. I said I was at the tail end.
Oh, well, boomers go up to like 64.
Well, that's a tail end. It depends on your perspective.
Okay. I'll move on again.
Your mindset is very useful.
I do have grandkids, though. So.
Okay, well, then you have the wisdom of I better move. Okay, so, okay,
Please do not ask Kat what year she was born.
When I was in graduate school, our motto was age and wisdom will always overcome youth and skill.
Wow, that's good. Our motto was question authority. You can tell, my first year at college, they canceled homecoming at the University of Minnesota because there was no interest. It was such an anti-establishment crowd. This was 1970. They canceled homecoming.
I was in high school.
Okay. You might have read about it in the paper.
I'm giving you.
No. Okay. And then Kat.
So I'll just offer it up so that nobody has to step in anything.
What's your sign? Let's get into astrology.
So I was born in 83. So I am at the very beginning of the millennial generation.
Oh.
But in true millennial fashion, I have decided to give myself my own generation name. I'm an in-betweener.
Oh, a tweener.
Because I think that I have more, in some ways, have more in common with the tail end of Gen X than I do with the latter end of the millennial generation. So I'm kind of the, or if you read articles, I'm the Oregon Trail generation.
I don't even, that sounds cool. I like that.
Oh, it was that you finished your typing class in elementary school and then you got to go on and play Oregon Trail and you had to hope that your family didn't die of typhoid fever or your ox didn't drown in the river. It's fantastic.
So this is a game, not a metaphor?
It was a wonderful game that we played on the nice old-fashioned, you know, box computers.
Oh. I totally remember the game.
Because you're much younger than the Donner Party. No, that was a bad thing.
You remember Gary because you're much younger than I.
I like where I'm at right now.
Well, I
don't have all the kind of insecurities that I had when I was younger. And I have I've seen a lot of things now, so I've seen the pattern of things. And I can actually look at things and see where it's going to go before it goes there and actually make some determination. Mm-hmm. And this is what, you know, what wisdom brings to the table for me is that I'm not in that space where I was earlier in my career, earlier in my life. I'm not like trying to climb the ladder and da-da-da-da. I'm trying to figure out how can I make a greater difference in the community that I'm operating in.
Well, I give you credit for staying in the community. I mean, I thought the Oregon Trail was, let's move to Seattle or Portland.
No, and it was created here, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it comes out of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So, but I think what's really, you know, I think what was unique compared to other generations, everything I say, I'm just going to sound millennial now.
Oh.
But I think what, you know, the uniqueness of when I grew up is that I grew up where I wasn't born with a computer in the house. I remember when we got a computer. And so kind of that transition. And I think, you know, Gary, to your point right now, I think I'm at a point where I can see such value from, I'm glad that I'm in a workplace where I'm working with people who are generations above me, so that I can gain that wisdom because I'm starting to lose that youthful, I know everything. And so just get out of my way and don't tell me how to do it. And I'm at a point where I know that I know some things and I know that I don't know a lot of things. Just don't tell my children that because I like them to think I know everything. And so I'm at a really, I think, especially in Minnesota, I think I'm at a really great place in my career where I'm benefiting from. There are a lot of people who have been in the workforce for a long time and have a lot of knowledge to share and that they're willing to share. But I'm also at a point where they're starting to move on, which is creating opportunities for my generation in a way that we can start really moving things forward. And you know, to tie back to our earlier conversation, I don't think we need to just rely on government and to do what we need to do in our communities. I think we can look to our entrepreneurship community. I think they can innovate and create some real change to some of the challenges that we have. And so I think we've got to move beyond relying on politicians and politics to solve all of our community challenges.
Well, I did a survey actually of the young entrepreneurs, and I found out two important things that tie into this. One, they didn't trust government. And they thought all these changes that need to be made, social change, should be their responsibility. And so all of them had a degree of social responsibility tied into their mission. And the old idea, forget the fellow that said that, that the only business for the only responsibility a business has is to make money for its stockholders. That's the old view. And so that's kind of shifting now. And I think the millennials are playing a strong part in that. Are you in that? Have you always had a social responsibility aspect of your businesses, Scott?
For sure. I mean, I wouldn't say always, because I was a consultant at McKinsey and we did whatever work we were assigned, and it was an amazing, great cultural firm that gives back. McKinsey Consulting gives back a lot in the Twin Cities, and wonderful group of people, but you kind of do the work you're paid to do. I went from there to a software company where we had an incredibly innovative way of screening renters for apartments. And one of the reasons I left is I was, you know, it's 40 hours a week, and I just didn't want my legacy to be doing a good job of screening people out of apartments. And even though the business was fantastic, somebody recently asked me, I make some angel investments, and asked why I hadn't invested in this company that does food delivery. And it's a great company, brilliant business plan, everything. And I said, I just don't give a crap about food delivery, you know, and I think that way about everything. I don't put money or time into things I don't believe in general, unless I'm forced to do it. That's obviously an incredible privilege in life. Some people have a totally different set of constraints that they live under. But gov delivery, when we were successful, government communicated better with the public. More people got flu shots, more people got fishing licenses, more people became foster parents.
They moved their cars.
They moved their cars in the snow emergency. They didn't get towed. Everyone's happy when it worked, and we made money, and it was, you know, Gary said earlier, like, we have something in common, which is we're trying to make money. There's something amazing that happens in a business, and I think in Minnesota we have an old habit of thinking this needs to be a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Almost any business, private sector, public, whatever, service is cross-sector. If you can create alignment between what you want to see happen in the world and how you make money and how you invest your time, that's an amazing gift. And if your business is being, you know, cleaning up, I know a person who does this, cleaning up, you know, commercial buildings, you can create meaning in that because you're creating good jobs for people, you're employing them, you're creating wealth for yourself, you're supporting your family, and that's a great thing. That accomplishes more than many of our nonprofits in Minnesota, that one business. And so if you can create alignment in the for-profit sector, I think that's great. And I've tried to do that in the first business, Gov Delivery, that I was the founder of. And then in structural, I just have a belief that the 40-hour work week is too much of our time to not focus on making it better for people. And honestly, the software applied to that problem has been more focused on letting you download your paycheck on your phone than on making your 40 hours more productive and effective and enjoyable. And so I have worked on that alignment. I will just add that, you know, you combine that with having the resources to then give back to the community, to invest in some cool companies. That's been awesome. And I have spent a lot of time on projects, private sector driven projects like Osborne 370, where we brought together developers to convert the old Ecolab headquarters to an innovation space for different types and sizes of companies, and working on that project in between my two jobs and helping make that happen and being a part owner of that project is an example of not a nonprofit volunteer thing or a government thing, but just a group of people seeing a problem and seeing if they could create alignment between a way of making money and a way of making our community better at the same time. And when that works, it's just so simple and so much better than sitting at the legislature, you know, or whatever. It's a perfect use of capitalism. So that's my pitch for private sector service.
I think the philosophy you're espousing is that it's all connected, and you can't pretend that it's not connected.
And I think a lot of people don't recognize how fortunate we are to live in Minnesota. Not to say that we definitely have our share of challenges, but I think we do have a business climate here that recognizes the importance of community. And, you know, the Great Northern wouldn't be here without the generosity of Target supporting us and seeing the the importance of creating and developing community and getting people outside to enjoy winter. So I think we need to, I think people also need to recognize that this is not a, that this is a unique space here that we have, and this is not the same way in other parts of the country.
Well, the ancestors of your boss, I mean, they're the ones that made it a big deal for to have corporate support for public ventures. I mean, who were the founders of MITA?
They were 14 corporations that you know, Target, which was Dayton Hudson at the time, Medtronic, U.S. Bank. You know, I could go on.
All the big ones.
All of them. And they're still on our board today. So my board is, you have those, is those corporations.
Everybody wants a board like that.
So I just wanted to get back. We run a program with Junior Achievement called the Junior Achievement MITA Fellows. And what's important about that is that we're working with young people for them starting their own businesses in St. Paul and Minneapolis. And everything that has been talked about, they get to choose whatever business they want to start. To a person, they're starting social enterprises instead of individual enterprises, even though they have a choice. When I talk to our entrepreneurs, we serve 850 entrepreneurs a year. I have not met one that is just about the money. It is always they want to do good and they want to do right by other people. 80% of MITA's entrepreneurs volunteer in the community, take on issues in the community. So when we're growing entrepreneurs, we're actually growing the civic infrastructure and leadership of our community. So this so people see this as separate nonprofit over here and business over here. Really, it is the business community that is driving some of our civic capacity here. And then when, you know, getting back to these young people, the fact that they see, that many of them don't get the opportunity to even think about what an entrepreneurship or entrepreneur is. And so we're bringing that into the classroom, and we're actually now working with a couple of secondary institutions so that they can matriculate from high school into college focused on entrepreneurship. And this is the future. Right? Meaning, well, we're not gonna get there unless we start, and we come into the class, and now it's standing room only to get into the class, right? I mean, there's 100 kids waiting to get in line for a class on entrepreneurship. When we first came in, people were scratching their heads saying, what is this entrepreneurship? I've never heard of it.
Well, the thing that I've heard is that for the standard Minnesotan tends to be more conservative than the standard anywhere else in the U.S., except maybe North Dakota. Okay, and so it was considered the more safe bet to work for a big corporation because that's stability. Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to be an entrepreneur, that's wild and risky. But if you look at the headlines today, who's laying off thousands and thousands of people every other day? It's these large corporations. Is it safer now to try to be an entrepreneur? That's where most jobs come from anyway, right?
Yes. The Kauffman Foundation just did a report last year that showed that most of the jobs in the U.S. are being generated by entrepreneurs. So it's not the corporations that are generating the same way they did years ago. And I was surprised to see that data, too. But it was mind-blowing data. What this sector that we're talking about, of creativity, of innovation, of changing the game, this is America. This is who we've always been. Right? I mean, it got taken to a level in corporate sector, but all those companies started off with small entrepreneurs thinking about how to solve a problem, because all entrepreneurs really do is solve problem, and then they extract value from that how they've solved that problem. And isn't that how it should be? If you solve a problem, you should be getting an incentive around that, right? And that's really what we're building in. But within our community, we haven't taught that as a value. So me growing up, it was like, you know, go work in government. You know, don't start your own business. That wasn't on the radar in my community. And that's what we're trying to put on the table now.
Hmm. We're down to our last few minutes here. So let's maybe look to the future. This is the third year of Great Northern.
Third year, hoping to really capitalize on the energy that was created last year through the Super Bowl. I think we helped to highlight nationally that you can get outside in the winter and do things. So
how do you top the Super Bowl?
We've got some fun things planned. And you know what? The great thing about the Great Northern is that we're really here to say that we don't need a big national organization to come into Minnesota to tell us to celebrate winter. We can throw ourselves a I'm trying not to swear. I really kick butt.
I think
butt,
it's okay.
Kick butt festival here because we deserve it, because we're Minnesotans and that's okay. So I would just say the Great Northern presented by Tarriot, we're in our third year. Mark your calendar for January 24th to February 3rd, and we'll have some exciting programming announcements coming out shortly.
Okay, stay tuned. And Scott, what's next for Structural?
Well, Structural, you know, we spent a good amount of time getting the business off the ground, getting the software built, because you have to do that. People don't buy something off that doesn't exist, and raising the venture capital, which was easier for us the second time around. So we built a team. We've got software. We've got multiple Fortune 500 companies now around town using the service, and more coming soon. For me, it's just really doing the sort of day-to-day work of an entrepreneur. I spend most, if you don't build software and you're in the software business, you better know how to sell it. And so I spend a lot of time selling it, and the engineers remind me that I'm not, I should be doing a better job of that all the time. So that's my main focus personally, once you've raised the money and everything else. So I'm working on that personally, and I'm also just, I'm really excited about what my adopted hometown now of St. Paul is accomplishing in supporting innovation. We've been hosting great tech events, entrepreneurial events. We have an extremely dynamic, amazing mayor at the helm, a new downtown alliance that we haven't had in the past that's very bringing more vibrancy. Mm-hmm. And we just are, you know, the streets are hopping. There's cool new things happening every day. And in many ways, I am just really proud of what everyone's come together to accomplish, private sector, public sector, nonprofits, to invest in making our community better. And I think in the national dynamic, we're just not accepting anything but the best for St. Paul right now, which I think is great.
And what's your favorite event at the St. Paul Winter Carnival?
Oh, you know what? We just love when there is, we like the sculptures and the ice castle, and we just love walking outside, and always seem to pick the very coldest night to do it. And I just honestly love doing that with the kids, just walking around downtown. They love being downtown. Bring your kids downtown. If your kids don't come downtown, man, we have two great downtowns. Bring them. Okay. Our kids love, like, take them up in the sky, sneak in, and take them up to the 20th floor somewhere. You know, what an 8-year-old looks like on the 20th floor of a building when they look out the window is amazing.
So, for Gary, you have grandkids.
I do.
So, take them downtown.
I do all the time. I spend a lot of time with them.
So, what's next for you? I mean, I keep reading these headlines. You got millions here and millions there.
Yeah, We're doing our finals of the Meet a Million Dollar Challenge in St. Paul at Travelers on January 30th. We are part of the wave of making St. Paul the place to be if you're an entrepreneur.
Well, that sounds like a great northern event.
Yeah. Well,
stay tuned.
I think stay tuned. There might be some new tech focuses.
You might have made a partnership here, Steve. You never know. So we're working on that. I think we're also being looking at moving. So we have an office in Minneapolis now. We want to do something in St. Paul. We want to have a permanent spot in St. Paul. So we're having conversations with some of the civic leaders and some of the folks to talk about how do we do that. So that entrepreneurs of color are part of the equation as we move forward. We've had conversations with the mayor, Dr. Bruce Corey, who's the economic development director, and other players to really look at what is MITA's presence in St. Paul look like, because we serve the whole state.
That's right. I think
not just
I get it.
North Minneapolis.
Well,
and we serve. Half of our business is in St. Paul, East St. Paul, West St. Paul, North St. Paul. We've got clients all over, so we want to make sure we're serving those clients well.
Okay, well, you're welcome. I live in St. Paul, so I'll be glad to see you over there.
Well, you can donate to us so we can move.
Okay.
Good one there.
This,
to make a
this
pretty
goes
comment.
Both ways. Well, thank you all for being on Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau. I'd like to thank also our engineer, Dan Culhane, and our guests today have been Gary Cunningham, Kat Beltman, and Scott Burns.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
A lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.